to On the Brink Radio, broadcast number 320. It's, of course, moi, G. Phillips, coming at you from Tasmania. It's a rainy morning here. I'm having my beautiful cup of certified organic coffee. Partially a blend from my friend Cyril von Winkel, whose family has a very beautiful organic farm in northern Tasmania where they grow the most beautiful lavender that you'd ever have. And he's making this really cool coffee. Everything seems to be lightening with the coronavirus stuff all around the world. Travel is gradually being reinstated in different parts of Australia. New Zealand's gradually lightening up. And you still got to watch out for what other people are thinking. Like, if somebody's sick, they might think they've got it. This and that, but I feel that it's the people on the news, the bits of the mainstream news that I've seen from when my friends watch television, they are seeming to refer to it in the past tense, or like last night, the news closed and he said, well, we just don't have any new coronavirus update for today. And the guy laughed. And so, anyway, hopefully it's all passing like water under the bridge, but the international travel thing is still pretty much in suspension, so I'm going to be applying to stay in Australia another 3 months, which I'm sure they'll give it to me because I just had to apply for a no further stay waiver, and they granted that in less than 24 hours, so I think they're trying to work with everybody and help everything to be really good for everybody. And then I'm hoping that I'll be able to return to New Zealand in September, if not sooner, and continue my healing expedition around Australia as soon as possible. I don't mind being in Tasmania for a while longer, but all things being equal, I would have been in Darwin by now, if not even further, according to my original plan. And so I'd really like to make it up there. They're just starting to come into the nicest weather of the year up there. There's also this really cool comet called Comet Swan that haven't checked up on her in the past couple of days, but about 2 days ago she visibly brightened to become visible to the naked eye suddenly, because they think it's a very new comet that's never passed within the solar system before, and that pieces of it are vaporizing and breaking off, and it suddenly became very bright. But the problem is, and it's visible from the southern hemisphere, but it's quite close to the sun, and so, and then with the it being in a nondescript part of the sky, not close to any bright stars. It is close to Neptune, but that's never very visible. And close to the sun, and then with the full moon, even with clear weather. But, you know, I'm still making an effort to try to see it. I love comets now more than ever. In my last show was about my love of music and music in my life, and it's such a huge topic, and I probably should have just done a nonverbal talk radio broadcast of just my music, which I've done before, but there was music playing behind me talking. But that, it's such a huge thing in my life. I love music. Today's show, broadcast number 320, is about a concept that I made up around 2002. The ultimate technology, which is what we actually are, and not only us in our human self-aggrandizement. We have tended to put ourselves on a pedestal, on a pinnacle of the I word, intelligence, and we somehow think that we're a part and more evolved than, more conscious, more aware than all the other life forms on the earth. But actually, I think that we're an anomaly, and we can't really understand ourselves in the same way that beings outside of ourself might be able to understand us. They certainly experience us, but it's probably the opposite would be closer to the truth. Since we're a very recent occurrence or innovation or expression of the unfolding creativity of life, we're one of the newest species, one of the newest things. And if you add in our mental, psychological, and cultural changes that have created vast behavioral transformations, whereas we've remained the same more or less biologically for a long time. But if you add all that stuff in, it may be that we're the least intelligent or the least evolved of all the life forms. If you look at the plant kingdom, which I've always been very, very close to the plant kingdom, but now more than ever here in Tasmania, and I burn my white sage every day, my salvia apiana. I honor my little go-to cola, my Centella Asiatica. I honor my cornmeal and corn silk and golden seal and my Senecio elegans, the beautiful purple Namaqualand daisy, and my beautiful lavender, Lavandula purpura, and the beautiful apples and the grapes that we're able to get juice from, and the beautiful food that we eat. And the plant kingdom has been here so much longer than the animal kingdom. And in Jeremy Narby's brilliant book, Intelligence in Nature, there's a chapter called Plants as Brains. And he talks about how plants don't actually, like we think they're lower life forms because they don't have nervous systems. But he says, well, look, they don't really need a nervous system because the structure of a plant actually it is like a nervous system itself. So it's very, very interesting. Maybe plants are the original nervous systems that actually evolved the animal kingdom in order to be more, have different characteristics, to be more mobile, and to have sense, in order to interact with light and the energies of the in universe in a different and probably more dense kind of way. Like, plants are probably quite ethereal. If you look at their continual interaction with the light, with the sunlight. But this show is a concept I've talked about many, many times before, and it's the word technology. Let's begin by defining what that actually means. It's kind of like words become locked into a certain stereotype. Like in the world of today, how many times have you heard the words conspiracy theory? And I'm always telling people, look, do you know what that word really means? Because I took 2 years of Latin. I remember spirare, S-P-I-R-A-R-E, refers to breathing. Like respiration, respirare. Respiration means breathing. Again, inspiration, it means a breath of life. You know, like you're inspired, you're alive. You've breathed in energy that's giving you enthusiasm and vitality. Well, conspirare, con means together. So conspiracy means literally to breathe together. And I'm always telling people that I think it must go back in the day to like the rulers of ancient Rome. They'd be sitting there plotting behind someone's back, and they'd be at their boardroom whispering beneath their breath. They'd be holding their faces really close so that they're sharing the same breath, and they're going like, look, we're gonna have that dude go and stab the emperor there at lunchtime tomorrow, and then we can be laughing, we'll take over. You know, so conspiracy really is par for the course. That's how business and governments work. I mean, it's like, you know, it's a given. It has to do with, that's what, anything that's secret that some people know and others don't, and especially if it's deliberately tried to be kept secret, that is a de facto conspiracy right there. So that's business as usual. But the category of conspiracy theory is just concocted, some researchers say, in the wake of the John F. Kennedy assassination. You have the theory of the lone gunman. It's simultaneously false stories based on Hitler's concept of the big lie and the absurdity and the sense of humor of the quote-unquote intelligence community, foisting all these unbelievable things to try to throw people off, anybody that's on the track of what might really be going on. And so simultaneously they put out their own bullshit, and then it's a convenient bend to where they try to marginalize anything that does have elements of reality, of the truth, whether the JFK assassination, all the false flag terrorism events like 9/11, the Christchurch quake, Fukushima, all this COVID hoax virus stuff, anything that people say that contradicts the mainstream ludicrous bullshit, it's swept into the conspiracy theory bin. And a lot of people think this way, but it's not what the word really means. It means to breathe together. And in that same way, if we understand the word technology, if you say technology, most people are going to go, probably the first thing in most people's mind, they're going to go, computers. But you know, technology, anything that's electronic, you've got machines, you've got cars, you've got factories, you've got tools, you've got all the fancy spacecraft and satellites and space probes and nuclear missiles and weapons system and all the stuff. Technology, tech, people refer to it as tech, the high-tech industry, Silicon Valley and DARPA and the Pentagon and stuff like that. Well, again, if we go back to the etymological root of technology, it comes from the Greek word techne, T-E-C-H-N-E. I can't write that in Greek while I'm speaking, but it's very interesting because it means the ability to make or do, something kind of like that. So technology isn't about any specific artifact of something that we've built, what Carl Sagan refers to as extrasomatic artifacts. No, it's about a process, the ability to make or do. So technology is anything that facilitates or allows or makes possible for us to make or do something. So if you really think about it, not only us, but every living being, every life form, every organism, every cell, every tissue, every plant, every animal, every organism, every ecosystem is an actual form of biological technology. And this is complementing us and life on what it actually is. It's the ability of life to make or do itself. Because what would we be if we didn't have a physical vehicle to live in? So would all objects in nature be a technology? And I go like, well, you know, in some ways yes, but if you think of, like, for example, a rock. Now, we don't really think of rocks as being alive. Like, anything that's alive would be a biological technology. But is a rock alive? And in many senses, it is. Is the earth a form of technology? And I think, well, yes, it is, in widely defined. But for now, we'll just stick with the concept of biological organisms as technology. But we find ourselves inhabiting the biological technology. And so instantly some people are going, oh, but that sounds quite complex. I don't know if I want to be that or not. And I go, but look, you don't have any choice. It's like, we're not necessarily talking about a full spectrum, deep philosophical or metaphysical understanding of who and what we are, nor are we talking about the necessity of understanding the almost infinitely complex processes that are going on in each of us all the time that make us possible, without which we couldn't exist, but we have no idea that it's going on, much less the ability or the need to consciously monitor, be aware of, or modulate all these processes. It's kind of automatic. But if you think of that, that's part of the ultimate technology that we're lucky enough to live in the same way that you don't really have to understand how an internal combustion engine works, how the brakes work, the gears, the differential, the suspension, the fuel, and the carburetor and the ignition and all the stuff. You don't have to understand how all that works in order to be a safe and competent driver of a car. But you do have to understand the process of navigation. You've got to be awake and aware. You've got to be able to handle the vehicle. And that is a very, very, very good metaphor for being a living, conscious, creative human being right now, which ties us into another extremely important concept. It's the word cybernetic. And we think of, again, people think cybernetics and they go, oh yeah, that's computers and Elon Musk and all that stuff. And I go like, but no, it comes from the Greek word kybernetes. It means the pilot or the navigator as of a ship. So cybernetics as a science was originally founded by Norbert Wiener back in the 1940s, having to do with creating guided missiles, missiles that could guide themselves to a target. So cybernetics is really not about computers, it's not about electronics, it's not about weapons or missiles, it's about the process of self-navigation. So we are a cybernetic biological technology. And another word that I've already used a few times that definitely relates to this, we think of computers as these electronic machines. In fact, there's one sitting right in front of me on the desk right now. But these are not truly computers. Now, I've looked up the etymology of the word computer. It comes from Latin, computare, C-O-M-P-U-T-A-R-E. And among other things, it actually means to think or reflect upon. It doesn't have anything to do with calculating numbers and stuff like that. I mean, those are some of the meanings associated with it. But it basically means to think or reflect upon. So, we are biological cybernetic computers in the sense of the processes that we all do every second of every hour of every day. Even when we're asleep, we're acting as living biological technology, and we're cybernetic computers in the true meanings of these words. And so if that sounds highfalutin and pretty kind of like science fiction, it's only because it really is, because this is the reality of who and what we really are. And probably right now, more than ever in the whole history of modern history, have we been all called upon not only to truly wake up and understand all this about ourselves, but to bring all this online, to make it real, not just as a theoretical something that we might get around to one day, but to actually activate and become and realize ourselves as the ultimate technology that we are, to honor the beauty and power of being here now, and to honor the sacred temple of our bodies and our minds and spirits that we're each so lucky and blessed to inhabit during this lifetime. That's really why we're here, to be the crew of Spaceship Earth, not just the passengers. All this stuff gets quite complex if you try to start delving into the actual mechanics and the algorithms and the processes that are going on in us all the time. And it really is of almost infinite or at least astronomical complexity. But regardless of the deeper level understandings of trying to understand who and what we are, and the whole ideas of, for example, some of the fancy schmancy stuff from philosophy and science that I talk about occasionally, like the eschatological aspects of being here now that has to do with the quote-unquote end of the world, that kind of thing, the teleological aspects that has to do with the purposiveness of events and things that happen as opposed to the randomness that science would tell us, for example, of an asteroid or cometary collision with the Earth. The whole idea of epiphenomenalism, which behavioral scientists might say that all of our mental processes are merely epiphenomenon of neurological processes, and that our whole conception of reality is a byproduct of behaviorism. And I'm sure there's probably elements of that. And I also talk about maps, models, simulations, and territory quite a lot. This is all well and good, and a lot of this does have very important meaning and relevance to being here now. But the reason I'm talking about the ultimate technology in this show today is because of the pragmatic aspect of the fact that we are living beings with minds and brains. At least we've convinced ourselves of that. And in our model of self-understanding, we are beings with minds and brains, and we are primarily psychological beings because our minds are sort of where reality is, and it's we're using our own internal technology all the time to do everything we do. And there's different levels of awareness. Like, I think it's possible, like every living being, from ants and microbes and birds and reptiles and mammals and fish, and everybody has different levels of this internal technology, and they're using it all the time. And you don't have to be aware of it or understand it in order to be a successful being, whether it's biological, whatever level of your purposiveness is. And understanding this to a degree is essential for us right now, if only to correct our course from how we've, to me, clearly gone astray from what it really means to be human beings and on this planet, Mother Earth. For literally thousands of years, we've successfully strayed so far from the true path of what it means for us to be here that we've become, as a whole, through the summation of our actions and inactions, we've become something totally different. A planetary, I call it the Homo sapien macrovirus, in the sense of the summation and holomorphic effects of an almost infinite number of actions and decision making based on improper navigation in terms of what we should actually be aiming for in our daily decision making and use of our creativity. This is kind of the crux of the whole thing. Because what we have to do is wake up and seize the control panel of our brains and minds so that we can bring ourselves back on course. It's like we've been on autopilot for so long, but the autopilot has been subverted by pirate factions in humanity, if you want to call it that, who have beliefs about themselves. And this whole thing with the coronavirus now is a perfect example. And a lot of this stuff is really coming onto the table in a conscious way more than ever before. For example, the sort of the ongoing Titanomachy, I think that's a really good word. It means Battle of the Titans, between Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Bill Gates. These are Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He is the Kennedy family. I mean, that is like they're a family of the true good leaders in the whole American political tradition. I mean, I think if there's anybody out there that stands for the true spirit of that America really was and still is to a degree, it would be him. And what he's saying now about the dangers of the whole global, the whole pandemic enterprise, the operation, the psychological warfare, and the push for global vaccination, and the arch evil nemesis Bill Gates and all these other people working with the military-industrial complex and their whole concept of a planetary internet of things, of which each person will just be one little unit with our remote sensors and our RFID microchip implants, so that we'll be able to be an effective artifact in the giant simulation. And so, I mean, who knows what they think they're really doing? Titanomachy, that's actually what we're witnessing right now between people like RFK Jr. and Bill Gates. But if each of us brought our own ultimate technology online, it would make a tremendous difference in terms of what's going on in the world right now. And I think that this is our challenge. Are we gonna seize the helm of what it means to be us before we could theoretically find ourselves without even having the option to do so? And I don't want to sound like a doom and gloom guy, and certainly not a conspiracy theorist, but I think that the dangers of vaccines are well known and becoming increasingly known, and not even just the traditional ones from the past, but from what might actually be in the new ones they're working on now. All kind of stuff, unknown genetic materials, electronic nanotechnologies. I mean, we have no idea. So this is the dark side of technology, the truly dark side. And all the stuff like the 5G satellite networks and the geoengineering, spraying the stuff in the sky to dim the sunlight, to battle global warming. I mean, there's one guy that's funding all this stuff, and it's Bill Gates. I mean, who is this dude? Is he a human being? You know, and it's like, this is all only possible in a world that runs on money. And so he's not doing all this stuff. Other people are doing it for him. And why? Because they're getting paid a lot of money. So that could be the crux of the whole, if you want to call it a curse, that we're casting over ourselves. It would be based on that. But that's not what this show's about. It's about the fact that we are the ultimate technology. And we're talking pragmatics here. We're not talking total philosophical understanding or that kind of thing. But if it works, then that's what we should use. And so that's why I want to talk about Dr. John Lilly again, the legendary mind explorer and dolphin communication researcher, who I was very lucky to be involved with, meet him quite a few times, and wrote an article on their behalf for this magazine in San Francisco, and got to play music to their dolphins in the lab. And very, very, very influential teacher in my life. But one of his early books, it's called The Human Biocomputer, Programming and Metaprogramming. And sure, that sounds high-tech and electronic and science fiction and stuff, but it really makes a lot of sense if you're able to get through his really dense writing style and understand the ideas that he's talking about. It's a model that works. And this is not, he wrote it from the perspective of not from the behavioralist mass media mind manager perspective, who looked at people as computers to be programmed. He looked at the human biocomputer as something, a true internal technology that each of us has and is, that we can be in control of, so that we can be self-programming and self-metaprogramming. And that this is like the key of his whole idea, because if you become aware of how your mind and brain is working, which is really what psychoanalysis as a tradition has always been about, all that's been traditionally done with the help of external observers or counselors talking with you. But if you could do psychoanalysis on yourself, and this is really exactly what all your sort of spiritual psychologies have always been about, whether it's Buddhism, Taoism, a lot of your contemplative Western traditions, any martial art, many martial arts, especially like Tai Chi and Qigong, and all your different types of yoga, many of these are exactly about developing your own internal technology, and not so much even the physical vehicle, but the mental vehicles and abilities. And so to be aware that you've got all this, to be aware that you're using it all the time, to be aware that you are the ultimate technology, that you are a cybernetic computer, in the meaningful, functional senses of these words. Not to scare people off with the science fiction sounding stuff, but to realize that we could talk about these processes in more sort of casual terms, but these are words that we use a lot, and so if we could kind of redefine the jargon in ways that are useful, it might help us all to bring reality back in line with what we really want, and to make what we want good for all of life, not just our own limited perception of self, but to expand our horizon of identity. To paraphrase Carl Sagan in one of his pamphlets about the danger of nuclear war. So to be aware psychologically, to be aware of our moment-to-moment creative processes and how our creativity and decision-making really is the rudder by which we navigate the ship of our own life. And so, how do we make decisions? How do we create reality? What do we think of as real? And this is where we need to consider the importance of the nutrition of our mind. Everything that you put into your mouth becomes you. And in the same way, everything you put into your mind or allow in there becomes you. And so if you're not aware of what you eat, you might put in a bunch of poison or junk. If you're not aware of what you let into your mind, you're probably going to accidentally let in a lot of unwanted influences and ideas and concepts and memes. And it's not like it's just a passive process. There's forces out there. In fact, some of the biggest corporate and financial forces in the world are designed specifically to poison your body and to poison your mind. I created the whole concept of infotoxin based on this. Toxin, T-O-X-O-N, Greek word, it means a poisoned arrow for a bow. It's a weapon with poison on it. So that's what mass media really is. We think of it as this benign or even educational thing that we can just flip a switch and get it for free, and it's going to tell us all the stuff we need to know. Au contraire, it's going to tell you all the stuff that the 100 loudest voices of the 100 largest corporations, what they want you to hear and know and think. And it's not for free. We are their product. So the key to getting out of all this is to understand the importance of us each being the ultimate technology, because if you understand your own internal technological processes much more, you'll be able to be in control of it. You'll be able to do. You can do whatever you tell yourself you want to do. If you make this process conscious, you can tell yourself that you'd like to be better at a certain thing. You'd like to be a better typist so you don't have to punch out your emails with one finger. You can tell yourself that you'd like to work on becoming a better guitar player, a better writer, a better artist. You can tell yourself that you'd like to lose weight. And then stuff like this is, you've also got to bridge the gap between thinking that you want to do something and actually doing it or making it happen. So this is another sort of problem area that we have. We tend to use verbalization for rationalization rather than for programming and self-metaprogramming. So that's another key reprogramming technique. Now this is key. This is not just something that they do when someone's snatched out of a cult. They have to reprogram them, or they have to deprogram them from the cult think back into reality. Well, we've all been programmed by the cult think of mainstream reality, and to bootstrap ourselves out of that and to reprogram ourselves into a clean slate of being open to nature and the beauty and power of being here now and the true path of the Great Spirit, and to recreate our own mental configuration based on how we really want to be. This is what it really means to be an artist, to be creating yourself in every way to recreate yourself, to deconstruct all the accumulated artifacts and external programming from your whole life, all the stuff we've learned and been told that you've assimilated, that you've had to assimilate in order to just get by, to question all this stuff and to think critically. These are all abilities that we all have and that we could all strengthen and polish and amplify and use to a much higher degree. And you can even create your own little software algorithms for your own mind. You can tell yourself that you'd like to do this stuff. And I've been doing this for decades. And so it's like my brain has kind of developed a mind of its own. And it's doing stuff all the time, whether I'm aware of it or not. Like, it's coming up with new ideas for paintings. It's coming up with new ideas for songs. It's coming up with new ideas for me to write about, new topics for my radio show, new words that I've made up. And I did this piece of art back in 2002 called The Ultimate Technology. And it's called Brains. The Ultimate Technology, Brains. Brain stands for being a responsive and actively intelligent noocybernetic synergist. So that's pretty good. Responsive. How many times have you communicated with somebody and they just can't be bothered to get back to you? You know, so if you want to be a good musician, you've got to be responsive. If you want to have empathy for your fellow beings, you've got to be responsive. It means that you acknowledge an interaction in some kind of way, rather than just being like a brick sitting there. So it takes... Lack of response is sort of a form of inertia, which is one of the things that we're talking about overcoming. Sort of a cognitive or psychological inertia. If you overcome that, you'll be a step ahead. And active intelligence, not just an intelligence that sits around gloating that it has intelligence. An active intelligence is, for example, seeking to understand and refine its own abilities and to go like, well, look, I'm not just me. I don't live in a world that's just my own little self. I'm actually part of a larger family and community of life and ecosystems. And so how can I change my life and live in ways that are of the maximum benefit to all the levels of life that I'm involved with, not just my own sort of distorted, limited perception of my isolated self? This is another form of basic behavioral modification and reprogramming that we could all undergo. How can I change my life to be of greater service to all of life? Or how can I expand my identity of who and what I am, what I think of as myself? And this is not really meant to be a joke, but I think that if we were able to expand our horizon of identity enough to realize that me, are not actually only just this entity inhabiting this body, but that actually we actually are part of the ecosystems that we see in our family of life, our plants and animals and the sky and the air and the clouds and the water and the rocks and the minerals and the sunlight and Mother Earth and the solar system. We actually are, and always have been and always will be, we actually are part of all that. And so if you identify with something that big and eternal, then you yourself are that big and eternal. And I think that's also a form of reprogramming or an opening of a door of consciousness that is possible. See, really, all this stuff, programming and metaprogramming and reprogramming and cybernetics and stuff, all this has been talked about before in various spiritual disciplines over the millennia. Probably a lot of it's in Sanskrit, for example. And I think the whales and dolphins understand all this stuff, but they don't use language. They probably communicated about it using sound or telepathy. So this is, you know, another whole dimension to this of the ultimate technology is how we communicate, how we perceive, how the whales and dolphins are able to know what's going on in the local universe, in on the Earth, in the oceans, in the solar system. How they can sense stuff through their connection with water. We have all these abilities. I know that from the time that my partner and I lived on Flinders Island for several months with no electricity, your whole system just sort of recalibrates at a higher level of sensitivity to where you can feel feelings and sense energies and hear sounds. It's both physical and metaphysical that normally have been blocked out or disrupted our whole lives. And so, like, the detoxification from noise and chemical toxicity, electromagnetic disruption from being around electrical fields and stuff, all of these are things that as part of the ultimate technology, you can understand how to cleanse and refine and purify and strengthen your own internal systems in every way to become a much more finely tuned receiver or transceiver of consciousness and creative energy from all the different dimensions through all the chakras, and be a much more effective passengers stroke crew of Mother Earth, and how you can be a true artist navigating and creating the beautiful tapestry of your life of being here now. And I'd like to talk about art as internal technology. Mayan scholar and visionary thinker Jose Arguelles has, his first major book was called The Transformative Vision, and there's a chapter in there called Art as Internal Technology. And I don't have that right in front of me, but it's a landmark look at exactly what I'm talking about how art and creativity can be used as, and has been traditionally used, like whether mandalas or sand paintings or the possibly rock art of ancient cultures. This art is not about creating pretty pictures for decoration or ornamentation or for the wealthy to own. I think that original art done by people was not graffiti, it was not just scribblings by kids, but it was the attempt to create something that we can see that has different degrees of permanence, whether a sand painting might last for a few hours, it might be a story drawn in the sand and then wiped away, or it might be rock art that has survived for hundreds of thousands of years. And it'll always be impossible for us to get inside the mentality of people that lived a long time ago. And any legitimate rock art researcher will tell you now that that's the last thing that you'd ever try to do, is to try to translate it. And that's what makes the whole thing of cracking the dolphin code and that kind of stuff so ludicrous, is that it just doesn't work that way. It's the same reason that you can't, that talking about music is like dancing about architecture. You can't translate dolphin communication into English. They don't think that way. But art, visual art, I think can be a very powerful tool for understanding ourselves and for sharing knowledge and wisdom and creating literally control panels for your mind and brain that might help us to be aware of all the amazing abilities that we have and that we're using all the time. And this is what I've done with my piece of art called The Ultimate Technology. But it could be done a million different ways. Everybody could do their own, you know. And so it's a challenge for us all to use our creativity. But I think that a big part of what I'm doing is carrying on the spiritual connection of the indigenous people of Australia with the whales and dolphins and water-based life. One of the things that Dr. Lilly talked about, that the whales and dolphins are repeater stations for the Earth's connection with water-based life on other planets and other star systems, and that the the spiritual tradition of especially the whale dreaming people of Australia and the song lines and the connection with the power spots of the continent, the chakras in the body, the rainbow serpent, all this relates as part of one giant, huge complex that is central to my life. And art, my art, it can be a form of sacred internal technology, maps for understanding who and what we are and for what's going on. And it can be pretty to look at and have nice harmonious colors that can have healing abilities, and the importance of beauty as something that we take into our minds. Hundertwasser, the artist from Austria, wrote extensively about the importance of beauty in our environment. And so I've got, I call it art for consciousness transformation. And it's not so much about looking at or consuming my art, but about being creative and creating art yourself. Because ultimately we are, each of us is an artistic creation of ourself. And so if we take the helm of what it truly means to be here now as the ultimate technology, each of us is the ultimate artist in our own life, because we've maybe largely unconsciously been allowing outside forces to dictate and create who and what we are. But now's the time to seize the helm, to seize your internal control panel, and become the super soldier cyber beings that we really, really are, in honor of being here now to be the crew of Mothership Earth, not just the passengers, to be the stewards and the kaitiakis and the guardians and the lovers of life and the artists, honoring the beauty and power of Mother Earth and trying to be of service to all of our fellow life forms, to Mitikaya Yasin, to be the artists and navigators and crew of Mothership Earth, not the Homo sapien macrovirus. Now's the time to do all that, because if we don't do it now, we may not have another chance. This is Jeff Phillips Wafferson signing off. Many thanks to Jill Stanley at UCY TV. Blessings from the heart of the crown chakra of the rainbow serpent. Aloha, Yama, G'day, Kia Manuia, Kia Ora. Check you later. Good day. Thank you.
Thank you.